702 Weekend Breakfast.
Oh, Nikki Bush is here in studio with us this morning. How pouring is it outside?
It's really, really, really wet and so damp out there, Pamela. Yeah. And I'm just reminded of what I did yesterday. I actually am. I'm in the middle of writing a new book, and when you write, you've got to ask a lot of questions, and you've got to really get in behind kind of the premise that you're working with. And I took myself off to a school in the rain.
Okay.
And it was actually amazing. It's a new school. Mm-hmm. It's called Broadacres Academy. It's just north of Four Ways. Mm-hmm. And being a new school, it has new grounds which haven't settled. So we're talking of the weather.
We're talking of the weather.
Well, I walked
muddy and all.
I walked in to find the school secretary in gumboots and then the rest of the staff in gumboots and other staff members going to Builders Warehouse to buy their gumboots and children in their gumboots.
Very
it was sweet. Actually so cute.
Very, very sweet.
And you know what happens to kids when they can't go outside? They can't move.
Restless.
They're restless and all the rest. Anyway, the rain stopped for a little while yesterday. And of course, what do children do with their natural sense of curiosity, which is actually what we're talking about this morning? What's the first thing they do when they see water?
Of course, they want to just jump and puddle on it. Of course.
Jump in it and slip and slide in the mud.
Of course.
So you have to know how many children I saw who were covered in mud. And the shoes, when the mothers came to pick up their children, just covered in mud. And those white socks that are never going to come clean, covered in mud.
The joys.
So the teacher actually said, so what was your rose and what was your thorn today to the grade twos? What was your rose this week and what was your thorn? And of course, all the nice things, the roses, every child just about said baking for Valentine's Day was the rose.
That's nice.
And the thorn was the rain.
Okay. So they are also very, very curious creatures.
Children really are born such naturally curious creatures. In fact, human beings per se are. Mm-hmm. We share three drives with other primates: sex, food, and shelter. Mm. But there's one that we have that the other primates don't have, and that is the ability to ask why. To look up at the stars and go, why? Other primates don't do that. So it's incredibly important as part of children's natural curiosity that they learn to ask questions. And actually they do. If you think about babies from a young age, they point at things before they have words. They point at things and they look at you or they go, and they're actually asking you to respond. They're asking you a question, what is that? And language is very much a part of curiosity, language development, because how do you express your curiosity and your ideas if you don't acquire language? So what we have to do as parents is we play a game of serve and return. Now, think about serve and return, Wimbledon, tennis. Okay, somebody serves a ball, and the ball goes over the net, and then there's a return hit back. Okay, now when we have these conversations with children, we need to engage with them, and we need to return the ball back to them. So the child who's going, you need to say, oh, yes, there's the moon. The moon is very high up in the sky. So you're giving them the word for the moon, and you're giving added context. And then as they get older, they start asking questions back. And it's very easy as parents, as our children get older and we, you know, they hit the threes, and at three they start asking why questions, which nearly drive us insane. Do you know, between 2 and 4 years of age, Paul Harris, who's a Harvard professor in question asking in children, okay, he is an expert, says between 2 and 5 years of age, a child will ask 40,000 why questions that need an explanation. That is a lot of information you have to impart to a child. And very often we default to getting it out of the way very quickly by answering the question instead of reframing the answer or going back to the to our child with a question of, gosh, that's a really interesting thought. I hadn't thought of that. Where do you think you might find more answers to that question? Or what do you think? Why do you think the sky is blue before we tell them why the sky is blue? It's so easy to shut down that conversation very quickly by giving them the closed-ended answer. And curiosity is linked to innovation and innovative thinking. Now, what does the world of work and business want right now? What are they prepared to pay a premium for? It's people who can think out of the box and come up with innovative thoughts. But sometimes innovation means throwing out what we know or discovering that we have a learning gap, that we have an information gap, and acknowledging our ignorance. So you think of somebody like Elon Musk with Tesla. So he wanted to create a brand new kind of car that didn't use fossil fuels. What he did was he took the battery out of the equation. He didn't even start off the premise of a battery. He said there are limitations to that. We're not even going to start there. And that's how he used his curiosity to innovate. And you know, he's actually made the designs of all the Tesla vehicles open source. They're available to everybody. So he's taken that curiosity, created something brand new, and said, hey guys, for the good of the planet, here it is. So we want our kids to get to that kind of level of curiosity. And questions fuel questions. When you start to discover that you don't know everything, you start asking more questions. And I am finding it quite interesting because I'm in the process of writing a book, you realize the more you research, the more you don't know.
Yeah.
And then the more questions you need to ask.
So our job, I suppose, then, is to lead them to asking more and more questions.
That's right. So there are three parts to this question, the skill of being able to ask a question, because this is really important stuff. It's a little bit like, you know, your child goes into grade one and you're all anxious that how they're going to cope. But you empower them by saying, if you don't know where the toilet is, ask somebody. Okay, empowering them to ask a question. So the three parts to the skill of asking questions in both children and adults. The one is discovering and acknowledging that you don't know everything, that you have an information gap, okay, that there is a bit of ignorance somewhere in you. And so we have to put our ego aside in order to ask good questions.
And you should demonstrate that as a parent.
We
to
do.
Say, I actually don't know.
Yes. So
how about we find out together?
And let's get on to the Google question just now. Okay. So number two is you're able to imagine different competing possibilities, answers, or solutions. Mm. So right now we have all these potholes. On the way to school, you could be having this whole conversation of, so what are we going to do about these potholes, do you think? I mean, I was thinking, imagine if this terrible pothole situation lands up with one of these kids who experiences their parents bursting a tire or whatever, remembers that, and one day comes up with some magical solution that you put a drop of it in a wet pothole and it expands and it fills this pothole with some, I don't know, plasticky, rubbery compound that saves all our wheels and tires. I mean, the only people who are winning at the moment really are the tire companies, I think. And then the third part is that you understand that you can learn from others by asking questions. Mm. So curiosity is a feedback loop. Mm. And it's very much about, part of it is social learning. Mm. That we realize that our mates know things we don't know. Our parents know things. Our teachers know things. So there's this cooperative learning experience. And we need for our children to go wide and deep. Now, this is where we have to be a little bit wary of technology. Mm. So what's the first thing that we do when we don't know something today? Mm. We Google it. Mm-hmm. Children will tell you that.
Yep.
Adults will tell you that. And that's really a very useful place to go for information. But it can circumvent very deep learning because it flips up the answer so quickly that you don't get lost looking at other things that come up incidentally along the way that might pique your interest.
You don't go wondering.
You don't go wondering. You don't allow the mind to just flow. You don't allow the mind to acquire stuff that may not be useful right now, but maybe very, very, very useful later on. And so I had this debate yesterday with a very interesting educator who we were discussing, is knowledge still important? Because I actually have come to the conclusion that it actually is. I often say to young people, especially like in the 15 to 22 year age group where they are either leaving school or they're going to find their first jobs, that you need to be interested and interesting. to future employers.
Mm.
That means you have to ask a lot of questions, be interested in what they do and how they think. And be interesting, you have to know a fair amount of stuff to be interesting. Otherwise, halfway through a conversation, you're not going to know what they're talking about because you have no context, because you haven't been actually consciously acquiring information and building your knowledge banks. And how can you say in the middle of a conversation, I'm not sure where that place is, let me go and Google it quickly. You'll look so unintelligent. So there is this, having a bank of information, and once again, because I'm writing a new book, I'm so aware of how important it is to have read widely across many disciplines so that your brain, which is brighter than you, can actually start connecting the dots for you while you sleep. It starts putting these connections together and you wake up in the morning and go, oh, wow, I hadn't thought of that before now. But if I hadn't read widely before, I wouldn't be able to connect those dots. And you see a machine, and Google and the internet is a machine, artificial intelligence, etc. These things are built for answers. They're not built for questions.
Mm.
So Google doesn't tell you how to phrase a question. Google doesn't tell you what you ought to know. Google will answer what you ask it.
Mm.
And maybe you're asking it the wrong question.
That's it.
You know, isn't that an interesting thing? So we need to have very, very curious learners who play with information for long enough that it moves beyond their working memory into their long-term memory where it becomes truly useful to them. Because this whole thing of potholes that we were discussing just now is not going to help the 6-year-old or 10-year-old child right now. But when they, in 10 or 15 years' time, are sitting in some laboratory pursuing some interest of theirs, they may just start connecting dots to their experience, their knowledge, their pain or their parents' pain, in some long distant past. And so having these long term memory banks is actually going to be very valuable to them versus just knowing they can find out a quick fact on Google.
Sure.
Yeah.
It's got a lot of us thinking because, you know, we've been shifting away from that and there's been a lot of debate, as you said.
Absolutely.
About how much should we be retaining?
Yes. So is a teacher's job to teach a child knowledge and information?
Mm.
No, but it is about introducing them to concepts and facilitating the conversation around concepts and about creating meaningful experiences or helping children create meaningful experiences around information. Because remember, the more meaningful it is, the more we remember it because it has meaning to us. So information becomes knowledge when a child can turn it around, use it, and create meaning out of that information. Otherwise, it's just a fact.
Mm.
If they can use it, they can make it interesting for themselves. And yeah, they ask these questions because they want to know. They really want to know.
Mm.
And we have to facilitate they're kind of like investigative reporters, aren't they? You know, they're like, they keep asking. And so that's
maybe also
like.
Part of the journey is for them to discover that some questions don't have answers and maybe they could be a vehicle to those answers one day.
I think that's a very, very important point that you've just made because we don't know everything. We absolutely don't. But now think about this. If children are curious enough and read widely enough and have interesting conversations over time. This is quite an interesting quote that I came across. Knowledge, even shallow knowledge, knowing a little about a lot, widens your cognitive bandwidth. So I thought that was quite interesting, cognitive bandwidth. It means you get more out of a trip to the theater or the museum or from a novel or a poem or a history book. Because it's not in isolation, you see. It means you can glance at the first few paragraphs of a story in The Economist. So obviously, this is for adults. But we do this when we speed read through a newspaper. We don't read the whole article. But if you widely read enough, you connect the dots.
Yes, yeah.
So you quickly read the first two paragraphs and you go, okay, I've got the gist of this. Because you're connecting the dots because you know enough.
Mm.
I'll come back to it later. Okay. And you grasp its essentials and discuss them later. And it means you can engage with the person next to you at lunch on a broader range of topics, contribute meaningfully to more meetings, be more skeptical of dubious claims. And there we have fake news and all those things. If you haven't
Big
read enough
issue.
And whatever, you will not know the difference between real and fake. Mm-hmm. Where am I and what I'm reading? And ask better questions of everyone you encounter. Mm. Whoever you are and whatever start you get in life, knowing stuff makes the world more abundant with possibility and gleams of light more likely to illuminate the darkness. It opens the universe a little. Isn't that beautifully put?
It's absolutely so stunning.
That is from a guy called Ian Leslie, who wrote the book Curious. And it is an outstanding, outstanding book for any adult, any teacher to read, because it really does contextualize this thing called curiosity. That is one of, I think it is one of the only ways to approach the very scary, fast-changing future is with a sense of curiosity and a sense of adventure. Otherwise, we will be moving into the future with complete and abject fear, you know, of all the changes that are coming our way, because there is so much change, so much disruptive change, and that's becoming, so curiosity and disruption are becoming the central themes of this new book, New Parenting
Book.
That sounds
exciting. I can't wait.
Writing,
we've got a toy.
Yes, we have. Actually, it's a classic. I'm not sure if you know this product.
Yes.
This is called Rummy Cub. And I have the classic Rummy Cub sitting in front of me right now. And there's also a new one on the market called Rummy Cub with a Twist.
Mm-hmm.
Now, essentially, Rummy Cub is, as it says in its name, rummy. Now, rummy is something you can play with a normal deck of cards.
Mm-hmm.
But in normal rummy, you can only have 7 cards in your hand.
Mm.
This is a numbers game. And it's about creating groups of numbers with the, and here you have tiles, and you get 14 plastic tiles in your hand. And you have to create runs, either of consecutive numbers in the same color.
Mm-hmm.
So it could be 10, 11, 12, 13. Or it would be 3 or 4 12s.
Mm-hmm.
You can get a maximum in the same. There are 4 colors. So in collecting 12s, you could have orange, black, red, and blue. And what happens is everybody starts putting down groups of numbers. And then you start manipulating and breaking up people's groups. So you break up those sets of numbers in order to get rid of your tiles the quickest.
Mm.
And it is a very way of making up and breaking up number in creative ways, a little bit like we do in Scrabble and Bananagrams, actually, is the would be the equivalent here, where we can break up our crossword puzzle that we're making as we find new letters. We can add to, take away, and it's about mental agility with spotting patterns, spotting sequences, and it, the more you play it, the better you get. This is, I've actually brought my travel size version.
The age groups for this?
We never go anywhere without this when we go on holiday.
And this will take you, you know, this will be there for years. Because
this is a classic. This is like having Scrabble in your home. So this would be for the child from about 9 years of age right through to adults. And it costs somewhere, depending on the size of the one you're buying, this is a travel version, anywhere between about 250 and about 450 rand, depending on which version you're buying.
Definitely worth it.
There is, right now, because I spotted yesterday, I quickly went on to take a lot to have a look, the new one, which is Rummy Cup with a Twist, which comes with 3 new types of jokers that do different things, is currently going for 207 rand. It's about a 47% discount.
Mm.
So it's quite a good day to go and buy that.
Okay.
So this is a great way to create mental agility with numbers and
bonds and all sorts of things going on in
there. Exactly. Yeah. And I've put a lot of stuff about curiosity up on my website this morning.
Perfect.
On nickybush.com.